My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is artist Jennifer Gray. We're in her studio in downtown Silverton at Water and Main above the wine bar. And thanks for doing KBOO during the pandemic.
I'm thrilled. Thanks, Joseph.
So, Jennifer, you've been a professional artist for 21 years. That means you make a living at this. And you have your own style, and you have your own clients, and you're basically an art success story. And you've been known in the Portland area because you've had galleries there.
With galleries there. I didn't own any. I was with the Lawrence Gallery 2003 to about 2009, and with Gallery 903. That took over the same space the Lawrence Gallery was in the Pearl District from 2010 to about 2015, and also was in a gallery in Carmel and for a little bit in Newport, Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. That's been my gallery experience. And there was a couple in the 90s early on.
Mm-hmm. But right now you have your own studio. You come here whenever you want, and you can paint big, you can paint small, you can do what you want.
So, I like big.
And you make a living, which I think is fascinating. So just tell us, we'll just look at some of your work. So you're known for your nudes in particular.
Yeah.
So what are these two nudes we see on the floor in front of us?
Nudes is something I've been doing for a long, long time. Even before I lived on my art, I was sculpting nudes, and I've been doing those consistently, both with commissions and for spec. For inventory and for sale. I love the human body. These are two beautiful models that did a photo shoot with me, and these are both in oil. I work entirely in oil, whether I'm using different mediums with the oil, whether it's Galka resin or liquin or Japanese dryer, but it's always oil. I just love the richness and the luster. There's nothing quite like it.
So these two, in one of them, you hang it vertically. Her feet are at the top of the painting. Her head is at the bottom, and her chin is so amazing. It's kind of jutting out. In reality, she was lying on the floor, propped up on her elbows.
Exactly. This model's a dancer, and so this is a dramatic pose. It's called Sizzle. You can see why she sizzles. She's professional ballroom dancing, so she was doing a dramatic pose. And I get accused of doing a lot of female backs, and I like to do more poses with the front. Most people are more comfortable purchasing nudes with the back. It's just trickier sometimes to get nude poses that appeal to the public.
Hmm. Well, I mean, this one is full frontal, although she has her legs crossed.
Yes.
And it looks to me like a charcoal drawing, but it's actually, you had her in the studio, you photographed her, and then you painted this in oil, correct?
Yes. Photorealism requires a photo. No one has all that information memorized. If I didn't use a photo, my nudes would feel more stylized.
And then what's your process with taking the photos?
It's all about the lighting. Really, the lighting, sculpting, and capturing the anatomy in a beautiful description.
So you would have her in and then set up the lighting, and then you shoot the pictures yourself.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in doing the whole process entirely yourself.
Mm-hmm. And then what was the process of painting?
Blending, soft washes, and even not technically the true meaning of pointillism, but you can see just putting the pigment within the tiny nubs of the canvas to get that really soft, almost that old grainy photograph look. I don't know if you're familiar with Jock Sturges or Julia Margaret Cameron, but those are big inspirations. I want my oil paintings of the female form or the male form. I've done some nude shoots with men as well, to have that old photographic soft focus graininess.
Mm-hmm.
And still feel very realistic.
Right. There's another one next to it, and it's a nude woman, but it's mostly her back. You know, she's sort of sitting down, but sitting on her legs to one side. Mm-hmm. She has her hair up in a bun. and really the back is magnificent. Just tell us a bit about that. What was this, a commission, or did you?
No, that is just as a photo shoot I did with this beautiful friend. I like to use a ballerina bun because it's just classic and enduring. And as you know, hairstyles can so date something. And so by just keeping it classic ballerina bun, most of the time it just endures. I love the soft lighting. You know, light wraps around objects, including, you know, any object, human form. And the way the light is wrapping around her, and it's called light burn in photography, where the edges are a little bit diffused, and it just, there's a softness, and it's almost, she's just being wrapped and held in light.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about what is the taste for nudes like in America, and where do these come from?
You know, I meet, there's all kinds of people, and I hear it all. I think when you're walking around Europe, you see beautiful fountains and statues all the time, glorifying the human body and celebrating the human body, and people just see it as beautiful art. But sometimes here, I know it's going to be a little bit more conservative. It was a real strong market for nudes when I was with the galleries. And now that I have decided to just live on commission, I notice instead of people buying nudes so much on spec, as you put it, it's well put, they tend to commission more nudes of themselves. It's just something that they want to have, like, near their vanity or their bedroom, and or any room. Actually, I've seen them a lot of different places, dining room mm-hmm. included. And have it more about the woman of the house or the wife or whoever it is, being more personal, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what's the process? Somebody will contact you, mm-hmm. maybe someone you never met, but they're referred by a friend. Mm-hmm. What do they say?
They want a nude. They love the nudes, and they'd like to have them one done of themselves.
And they'll sit for a photo and then mm-hmm. expect a delivery in a few weeks?
Because I do a lot of soft washes and tend to build all of my oil paintings, whether it's a nude or any style I do, it takes probably a couple months mm-hmm. just to make sure every little thing's perfect.
Yeah.
Upon their approval, of course.
Right. So you have so many styles, and they all look as though you specialize in that style because your technique is so amazing.
Thank you.
One of the things you're known for is waterscapes. So you grew up on a farm where the river flowed through it?
Yes, the Santa Yam flowed through our property for a few miles, and we had lots of tributaries and sloughs and wetlands and ponds and even just lots of irrigation puddles in the field. So just the wildlife in and around the water and the light on the water and whether there's plant life around it, it's just always been a consistent, a form of beauty that it's always been near and dear to me.
Do you have a special technique for when you're reading the water, looking at the different reflections? Like, I would imagine water is so changeable. Mm-hmm. I always amazed that an artist can just capture the way the surface of water is. It's so dynamic. So what do you look at when you're looking, say you're looking at the Silver Creek out the back here?
It's all about the light. Again, the way the light plays on the surface and the flow, how it reacts when it hits a solid. I find all that fascinating.
Mm-hmm. One of your pieces, you have a print of it up here. It's just a small print, but it's a beautiful koi pond. Is that right?
Oh, the yes.
It's got how many fish? Three, oh, six,
dozen,
nine, maybe. Ten. Yeah. And they're all different colors, and there's some weeds. The water is blue, but you can't really see the surface of the water. So what was the story behind this fish?
They're koi fish, and I love them. They're so beautiful. I'm always transfixed anytime I'm staring into a koi pond. It's stunning. And I love the beauty beneath the surface that you mentioned, that it's somewhat diffused and there's a movement, and the way the water distorts shapes like of the plant life down underneath the surface, just always always loved Koi, and I'd like to do more of them. I did this for one of those fabulous clients that you would love to clone. I would just love to work for them all the time.
What's the story with the client?
Referred by mutual client and friend, and they they love Koi like I do, so we just had a lot of fun putting this together. Mm-hmm. And I've taken Koi pictures just like I have of water all my life. I have rolls and rolls of film of photos of Koi, waterscapes, ponds, the light on the surface of water, and clouds.
So some of the other animals you've painted, we're looking at this incredible, again, photorealistic Highland cow. So it's a sort of, gold or toffee-colored cow with all the hair is hanging in its eyes. You can just about see the eyes. It has these long horns and a big, big kind of wet nose in your face. So tell us about this original animal.
And this one's called Bangs, speaking of the hair in their eyes, because they're just so cute.
Do they want this thing? I mean, it's such a beautiful execution of what is really a kind of dirty, smelly animal, right? you don't want to be near one of these if you have a beautiful, clean home.
And like you pointed out, I did not have the cow in my studio posing for me. I have to work off an image because the light changes, and they just don't want to hold still. They're not very cooperative.
So did the client give you the photo or just the opportunity or what? Where did you get the cow?
Well, I got it from a professional photographer and paid for the rights to paint it. Mm-hmm. Want to do everything legally and by the book. So with that, I do like to take most of my own photographs. I didn't have access to Highland cows at the time. Mm-hmm. But now I know where to find a few. They've become growing popular, popular animal to keep. I noticed in these outlying farms and hills. You can find them now and then.
Really?
Yeah.
In the Silverton area?
In the Silverton area, yeah.
Okay. Now tell us a bit about this incredible elephant. It's got to be the most wrinkly elephant I've ever seen.
No, they're pretty wrinkly when you get up close. I was hiding in a water hole in Zimbabwe on safari with my husband, and this big, beautiful, just the best example of his species, this majestic old bull comes sauntering up, and, you know, they're so quiet because they have all this fat in their feet. And he was drinking, and it sounded like a barrel being poured into his mouth, all this massive amount of water in his trunk, and he smelled us, or heard us, I guess, but he put his trunk out into the air and was twisting it back and forth. You could tell he could smell us. And then he did a fake charge and flapped his ears, and that was back in the old film days with cameras, not digital, and I took tons and tons of pictures, and I thought, well, we're going to die, but I'm getting great footage. And I was lucky enough to have a few turn out, and I've been painting elephants ever since. I just love them. I'm obsessed mm-hmm. with them, and I'm greatly concerned about their plight.
Mm-hmm. So you started just painting the same elephant you'd seen, and then how have you branched out over the years?
We took pictures of quite a few elephants, but that is by far my most exciting elephant encounter.
But now, if you wanted an elephant today, where would you go for the image source?
Lucky for me, I have lots of friends that go on safari. So I just have asked and asked. I'm being commissioned to do an elephant right now from some clients that live in Scottsdale that went on safari last year. And fortunately, they're great photographers and got some very clear images. You can imagine a blurry image would be very difficult to paint. And so I'm doing that for them right now.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Jennifer Gray. She is a professional artist living in Silverton, Oregon, and she is showing us around her studio. She's brought some work back to look at. The studio itself is a working studio. There's oil paints everywhere, brushes. Everything's neat and tidy, I must say that.
Oh, wow. I was so thrilled this was radio, so I didn't have to clean.
I'm really interested in how you survive as a professional artist, and you're beyond the gallery system. So tell us about your time pre-gallery and then having a gallery in Portland and then what you do now.
Well, it's important to mention that I didn't have a gallery, so I wasn't a gallery owner, but as an artist, you're contracted with a gallery, and then they mark up the art and take, usually it's 50%, and that's how it works. So working artist, I think it's helped me that I have a ton of styles. And so when I don't really have an audience for one style, the likelihood of having an audience for another style is higher. Galleries actually don't like that. They really want a recognizable look, a real brand, if you will, that it's easier for them to market. And I don't want to... I loved my gallery experiences with the Lawrence Gallery in Portland was my first, I'd say, big gallery as a professional artist. I was with a couple galleries in the 90s that were some of the startup galleries in when the first Art Walk, First Thursdays were really getting going. Gallery 903 that took over the Lawrence's space in the Pearl District was a wonderful experience. The owners are great, lovely people. I was showing at a gallery in Carmel on Ocean Avenue, and for a little bit on commission only through a gallery in Newport, Rhode Island. All these were great experiences, both learning experiences and some amazingly positive experiences. But I felt like they really want... There is a degree of needing to cater to a particular audience, as well as, again, having that recognizable brand, that recognizable style. And I wanted to experiment more and take more risks and was getting some more business opportunities from designers and people outside the gallery scene that I wasn't able to. I wanted that freedom. It's been since 2015, and so far it's been a really good experience.
So you wanted to experiment, like you want to do abstracts. You love abstraction.
I did abstracts with the galleries.
But the galleries don't really want you doing elephants and abstracts, right? They just want you to do one thing.
It's easier to market somebody when they have one style, but I was really fortunate at Gallery 903 to be welcome to do both. But I wanted to experiment even further. And as I mentioned earlier, being a commissioned artist, you do get pulled and stretched in directions that you wouldn't normally take yourself. And those kind of risks, I wasn't as open to being with a gallery. And now that I'm not with a gallery, I'm getting, for example, these giant airplane paintings for people's airplane hangars. They're kind of their man caves. These are people who collect old World War II, P-40s, and P-51s. They go to the air shows. It's a big lifestyle.
Hang on. These people collect the actual planes or just pictures of planes?
Both.
So that you could go to someone's house and then have a hangar.
Yes.
And then you go in the hangar and they've got a few old planes.
Yep.
And then they might ask you to do a painting of something else.
Yeah, exactly. And these hangars are often their man caves. They like to hang out and they've got a bar and... They like to be there with their friends and their other airplane enthusiasts.
So what are we looking at here? This is a World War II plane. It's got a pilot in it, a bunch of swastikas, like he's been shooting down German planes.
Yes, Messerschmitts.
Right. Oh, there's a Messerschmitt in
the
background.
There's three,
right?
Messerschmitts.
Oh.
There's one that's going to be shooting at him, and there's two that are going down in smoke that I've yet to paint all the smoke.
And he's got... Oh, yeah, this isn't finished.
This is not finished. So the swastikas are the kill marks to show how many he's shot down already. This one's called Flying Aces, so he's very good at doing
right.
this.
But the guy, the pilot, is looking right at the viewer. It's almost like he's looking at us and he's not really focusing on the job.
There's a lot of liberties with these.
What is going on here?
There, if you notice that this isn't perfectly, her leg would be going flat this direction on the wing.
Yeah, so, there's a pinup girl painted on it. Explain her.
Yeah. She's an important part of the nose art with the shark mouth and the title and the kill marks. The P-40s had a lot of the nose art done on them. P-51s, not so much, although you see it now and then. The research has been a lot of fun. I just really have enjoyed making sure everything's historically accurate and reading about battles and what kind of planes were up in the air together so I don't paint the wrong ones. And what, you know, the very beginning before the P-51s, the Messerschmitts were really a superior plane in the dogfights, and now that... we had the P-51s. They were that made a huge difference in the war, and all that technical stuff. But so you asked about him looking, and this being a little bit, not realistic. They are very playful. This is all about having fun and taking liberties. And sometimes I'll even have a girl sitting on the wing. So it really isn't as realistic as some of my other work that we've been talking about.
Right. And it's called Flying Aces. She's holding up a playing card.
It will be an ace when I'm done.
Okay, so it's a blank card now. And can you say anything about the client?
Probably not their name or anything, but these are just people who are enthusiasts and love to fly them and collect them. And I've met a lot of great people that I've gotten referrals from my initial clients and meeting more and more fun airplane enthusiasts.
So if somebody sees your other work, like, what makes them think you can paint a plane?
Well, technically, this isn't as challenging as, say, the Highland Cow or the Koi. So there's that. Like, well, she can do a Highland Cow, she can paint an airplane.
And tell us a bit about how you survive, you know, without a gallery sort of hustling and saying, we want X pieces every year. Without that, you're kind of on your own, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what is it that keeps the work coming in?
I don't know, and I'm thrilled that it does. Just when I think I'm going to run out of bookings in several months, the phone rings. It just keeps ringing. Mm-hmm. And or anymore, I guess I should say email. But just got a call from a woman who had bought some pieces from a gallery in years past, and she needs some art for her new home she built in Vail, and we're going to be starting to work together next week.
Mm-hmm.
So it just keeps happening. It's like it just keeps reconfirming that I'm where I'm supposed to be and doing what I'm supposed to do. And I love where I am. We can talk a little bit about being above a wine bar in Silverton. I can hear the jazz playing and the laughter and the glasses tinkling. I feel like Moulin Rouge or the Toulouse-Lautrec over the Moulin Rouge.
And these people, like in Vail, I mean, how do you your clientele are all over the place, right?
They're all over. A lot of them right now are out of state. And it's just kind of word of mouth and referrals. If it's not directly with the client, sometimes it's an interior designer or an architect. And it just keeps mushrooming. I find the galleries, the experience I had with the galleries was essential to get that exposure. I don't think these would be happening if I hadn't been with galleries for years.
Mm-hmm. But your advice, like if a young artist said to you, how do you make it? How can I make a living? What do you tell them?
Do the galleries, become a member, I mean, not a member, but be contracted with a gallery and get that exposure and let them do their job, which is to publish you and get your name out there, and that will pay off. It's a great experience. It's a lot of important business information, too, like knowing the laws surrounding your industry is important, knowing more about contracts. My advice is to that, know the laws surrounding the industry, know about what can go wrong in business. Some galleries are more honest than others. And also meet people who like to buy art. Market yourself with designers and architects and work hard. I'd say that most of art is discipline. A lot of people have a romantic notion that it's all inspiration, but it's like getting to the gym. You really have to discipline yourself, and especially if you're living on commission and you don't have a gallery to sort of, you know, crack that whip, you really have to discipline yourself and put in the time, and a lot of it isn't just inspiration. It's darn hard work. I think I can quote Andrew Wyeth in saying it's darn hard work.
Mm-hmm. And you have a kind of, not a formula, but you have an explanation of how price varies. What are some of the things in an artist's life that will push the price of their work up?
Well, that's a big part of why I would recommend being contracted with a gallery, is that if you are purchased by certain important collectors that have other significant pieces within their collection, that can really help create a better price point. Also, being having acquisitions by museums is very important. If you want to get way up there, that's a good. And you can often do that. Say there's a new green building, alternative energy or something. There's something political. If you paint that and then submit it to a museum, that's a great way to get an acquisition. It kind of has a significant point in history or political statement to it. Also, being published, getting published in any kind of print like magazines, whether it's interior magazines, art magazines, business magazines, all of that exposure is really important in confirming a good mm-hmm. price point.
So like if one of your paintings is in the background in a New York Times spread about a beautiful house, that doesn't go unnoticed.
That's very helpful.
Right. Do you have any other advice to people about, in terms of style, because you have a diverse style, I mean, have you managed to keep all these kind of plates spinning and keep advancing your technique?
I don't know if that's conscious. I really, we get bored doing the same old thing decade after decade. And kudos to those artists that do, but I could not do it. I've heard some artists say, if I do one more, blah, blah, I'm going to die. But if they don't, they don't eat. So it's tricky, and I feel like I've just been very fortunate.
Mm-hmm. What are you going to be painting in 20 years?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I'd like to think some more abstracts, and I'd like to even experiment with other mediums like fabric and colored pencil and, you know, I know I love oils, but they require special methods of cleaning and space. You know, it's not something you can do if fumes are a concern. So I would like to branch out into ways that are healthier for my lungs
mm-hmm.
in the long term. 20 years is a long way off, so I'm thinking like that.
And Jennifer Gray's work is available to look at jennifergrayart.com. And by the same name on Instagram. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus. I was with Jennifer Gray, a professional artist in Silverton, Oregon, in her studio. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus.
Thank you so much, Joseph. It's a pleasure.
This is Art Focus. My name's Joseph Gallivan. I'm here on your community-supported radio station, KBOO Portland, where we are one of the few shows talking about visual art in Portland. Thanks for listening today, and I want to remind everyone that if you can donate today at kbu.fm/give, please do so. We've had to cancel our usual spring membership drive, so we hope you'll show your support by giving online. We know times are tough, so if you're not able to donate, don't worry, but if you can, please show your support for this free community resource, kbu.fm. Thanks very much.
Andy walking, Andy tired, Andy take a little snooze. Tie him up when he's fast asleep, send him on a pleasant cruise. When you wake up on the sea, sure to think of me and you. To think about paint and to think about glue. What a jolly boring thing to do. Andy Warhol, let's just scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Esta es una sección especial en español en respuesta a la emergencia